This is Dr. Nick Sotelo. You have me and the Upgraded Life podcast pumping into your ears. In this show, I'm going to bring you a local author, an author that's from the same town as I am here in Salem, Oregon. His name is David Espinoza. He is an author of 7 books. He is firmly rooted in his Latino culture. And in this show, we just have a conversation about things that are important to us, that being how people get ahead in life and youth sports. So it was a fun conversation. I hope you enjoy it too. Let's buckle in and let's go for a ride with author David Espinoza. Hello, thanks for tuning into the Upgraded Life podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Nick Sotelo. The Upgraded Life is my personal project where I help people realize and reach their potential. I've been a professional helper for 20 years. Here's what I'm convinced of. The life that you have right now and the life that you want tomorrow is a product of your personal mindset, mission, and movement. Each episode of the Upgraded Life podcast is going to give you something that you can do as soon as the episode is over to upgrade your personal mindset. Your mindset informs your mission. Your mission tells you how to move every single day. And together, that is the Upgraded Life. All right, we are here with another episode of the Upgraded Life podcast. And today's guest is somebody that's actually in my hometown. It's somebody that I have mutual connections with. It's not somebody that I'm just purely met through social media, like sometimes these guests tend to be. So I am super grateful to have David Espinoza on the Upgraded Life podcast. And let me tell you a little bit about David. He was raised in a poverty lifestyle as a young man. When his family migrated from Texas to Oregon in 1976, they were almost homeless. And then throughout the years, David escaped poverty while having a growth mindset and making good decisions for his life. He eventually landed a job as a software engineer and worked for 31 years before retiring at age 55. He became a full-time author after that and has now published 7 books. He enjoys writing inspiring and resilient stories. He loves Jesus, his family, writing, sports, and encouraging young kids to make good decisions. He's a first-generation college graduate. David, thank you so much for making the time for me. I'm super excited to have you on the Upgraded Life podcast, and just so you can share your story with me and my audience.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Perfect. So I just want to learn about you and kind of, their introduction talked about the things that you're focused on and what your passion is. And so let's start with you wrote 7 books after you retired. So a lot of people think about retirement as, you're done with work and you're just kicking back and living the easy life. But you wrote 7 books after retirement. That's pretty amazing.
Yes, absolutely. And to be honest with you, I had written 2 of them while I had a day job, while I was software developing, and I would, during my lunchtime, I'd go and, learn more about how to publish, learn more about writing, so I purchased all these books, how to write a novel, just a lot of self-guided stuff. Then I writing club courses in college, of course, as well. But I had written, 2 books while I was, and it just took a little bit longer, cause you have to lunch times or whatever. And the other 4 were right after I retired. I started digging in on my 3rd one, 4th one, 5th one, and 6th one, and 7th. And then currently the 7th one, which I just released, which I'm really proud of. But yeah, it's been a journey, a learning curve for me that I was glad to dig into, because I had a passion for writing. And all these years, I really loved writing ever since high school, as a jock though, I was a sports guy. And always advertising that I love to write. And I was taking up, guys give me little hassles in the dressing room or whatever. So I just kind of kept it to myself. But I always enjoyed writing.
So is it safe to say that, after you got your first 1, 2, or 3 done, that the process got simpler for you?
Well, you have the, like I talk about me being more of a growth mindset person all the way where I was raised in Texas, where I always wanted to be better at certain things. And then also sports were my counseling. because I had a lot of dealing with a lot of issues, and I wrote an autobiography, my life story, which a lot of people really, and to just help others to get through challenging times. But anyway, yeah. And now I forgot what your question was.
Yeah. If your book writing process, you know, yes, became easier over time.
Yes, it has become easier, but it's always a lot of work, and you always have to come up, you know, from the minute of, you know, you have this bright idea about what to write about, first of all. And so for me, I always have to have a passion for what I'm writing, because if I don't have a passion for writing, that's not fun for me. It's really a hard thing to do, and that just comes easy with me. So anyway, yeah, it's a long process. What I did is, the initial thing I did is I set up an appointment with an actual publisher from Woodburn. They were publishers of scenic books, not really I write. But I set up a meeting with them, and I asked them, you know, what do I need to do to publish my story? I already have it written, because I had the manuscript. So that's one of the, for me, is the manuscript. Once you get that manuscript done, then you can start doing research on who is going to be the best publisher. And there's two types of publishers. You know, you have the traditional publishing, and then you have self-published. And I'm a self-published author, just because I didn't want to go the route of traditional. I think I would if I had the opportunity, but I saw the challenges with that versus how I could get my book out a little sooner. And also, I learned a lot about traditional versus self. And I'm the type of person that I really don't like to take risks, and unless I'm really positive, because a lot of people think that they can write a manuscript, turn it into a traditional publisher, and then right away in the next month, they're going to accept your book. It's a little more complex than that. Now you have a literary agent before you can even reach a major traditional publisher. These days, a lot of self-publishers are doing better than traditional publishers. It just all depends on the whole contract thing, and it's really complex. And so I go this route, and it's been working out for me just for my pace. And so one thing that my publisher, I do have a contract with a publisher, but it's not like traditional publishers. It's more like I have the copyright, right? I'm the owner of the copyright of all my books, so I can do whatever I want. And also, I have to market my own stuff. You know, I have to market my books on my own. They don't do it for me, but print and format the books for me, and I pay them a fee, and the copyright stuff and the Library of Congress, all that, you know, technical stuff that has to be legally, you have to make this product yours. You know, they do all that for me, and that saves me a lot of hassles. And so I get into any kind of legal trouble or, you know, so yeah. And then, of course, once you submit the manuscript to them, you know, they decide whether they want to publish or not. And then they published all of mine. And then you get, that's when it's a different mindset. you can either like stick to it, be dedicated. You really want this to be out there. And for my reasons to be an author is I want to give other people pleasure. I want to educate other people. And I also want to let other people in that a real person actually went through this. They can learn from that, learn from my mistakes. Cause you know, I did write in a lot of, you know, what I write about it. Like with my autobiography, I was honest about what I went through, some of the mistakes I made and how it overcame. And so, yeah, it's a long process. The way I write a book is I get these bubbles together, you know, and so every chapter is a bubble. And all those are main ideas. And I write the entire manuscript. It may take me a year, 2 years, whatever. It may take me a long time, but I actually get the whole thing on paper. I don't worry about editing, paragraph transitions. I just get the whole thing up. And then once I'm, of course, it's going to look like garbage, right? The rough draft is just horrible. It looks, but that's when I start. And that's when I start refining, rewriting. I have a reader. I have a graphics person. I have a content editor. And I'm really blessed because my family members are my team. And so I have a leadership role. And they help me, like with Jake, he's my graphic person. He does my book covers. You know, I just tell him what I want on him. He puts it together for me, sends me the PDF, and then I send it to the publisher. My wife helps me with detail stuff. She's really good at that. And I'm a detail person too. So we crank on the grammar and the, you know, the wording, the sentence structures, all that kind of stuff. We just try to get And then Matt, my younger son, he's my content editor. He'll tell me, well, Dad, this would belong better on chapter two, or, you know, because it's hard to know everything as an author. I have the idea. I write the whole story, but then all the other pieces have to come into place too to make that story flow accurately. So Matt helps me with that. And he, of course, they put the red notes when I get the manuscript back from them. And then I go to work and I rewrite. And then I drill it for like, I don't know, this last release that I did, I drilled it for like 13 rounds. And, you know, every time you keep finding something, you keep finding something, and you're never going to get it all. I mean, I know that if an editor grabs a hold of my book right now, they'll find a couple errors, you know, but you know, it's just the human eye can only catch so much, even though you go over and over and over. And so there's a point in time where you just have to, you know, this looks solid. This, you know, not many people will see that, you know, extra word or whatever. And so, yeah, that's how I do it. And it's been working out pretty well. Yeah. So it's a little bit about the process, you know, and of course you go back with the publisher on, you know, they send you the first, after you've drilled it so many times, you send it to the publisher, they send it back to you. Is this how you want it? You know, let us know. And if not, then there's a format. There's a format that we use where I send them a document and I say, okay, page this, like page two, paragraph five, line six, change this to this. And that's all I can do at that point because it's already, they have it. Now it's just replacing. And we go a few rounds like that until it's really clean. When I give them the okay, they format it. They put the cover together. They do all that. And it takes time. It takes weeks. And it's just not overnight because they have other, you know, people, authors that they work with. And so it's a patient process. And, you know, talking about mindset, my mindset, young kid had always been, I want to do better. I want better for my life, for my family. I, you know, the way I was raised was really sad in a way, but not all the time because you have, you know, I had two sisters and three brothers. And so we had fun, you know, we didn't have much money. Sometimes we didn't have any food at home. It was a struggle. And then watching my parents just work hard from, you know, well, my dad, mostly my mom was home with us, just watching him labor job to labor job. You know, I had this mindset of just, I want better for myself, for my family in the future. I don't want to live this like this. Whereas some people have a different other mindset of just they don't care. They just want to go and get into trouble, start drinking, you know, whatever. And I had a lot of people that was around like those kind of mindsets that I was around in Texas where they just were no up to no good, basically. And I think it's because of their family life, because I saw what they were going through. But some of us make decisions to go a different route, to make it better, to help others, to not go to what you see around your neighborhood. And my mindset had always been like that. And same with the author adventure. You know, I saw this as something I would probably enjoy. And mostly, to be honest with you, it is a lot of hard work. But when the finished product comes out, it's something that you can be proud of, that you can deliver this to the audience, the readers, is something they can escape from their lives and enjoy and read something about, you know, somebody else that experiences, or a subject matter. You know, like I wrote this book, Parenting the Athlete. I wish that every parent had that is doing sports with their kids right now, because I know they want to raise their kids a certain way, and that's okay. But there's a lot of things that I experienced throughout my life because I was around sports all my life. I went up to the professional level in football. And so I wrote all the things I learned, that basically what not to do. And you know, they may not be doing those already. They may be doing everything right, and that's great. But I know that you can tell by reading a child, by listening to a child, if they're having fun or not. And the most important thing that I wanted to get through this book, the message I want to get through this book, is to support your kid to have fun and not just tell them what sport they need to do, pressure them into practicing every day, 500 tournaments a year, just little things like that. The book, that's what can happen when a kid goes through that. And I think kids go through that, even with my kids for a while there, I was like pressuring them to practice hard. And then when I realized what I was doing, when I started listening to them, it's like, oh my gosh. So then that's when I backed away and I started making it in a way that they could have fun with sports and not just, you got to get better, you know? I wrote that book to help others. So I enjoy writing to help others. And I've had a lot of good feedback on a lot of my books that I've written. And all the books that I've written, like I said, I've written 7 books, and every one of those I had a passion for, or I wouldn't have written it. Especially the last one that I wrote here was more about a community that, you know, the Oregon Latino basketball tournament. Man, I played in it for so many years. And there's things that I wrote about in that book, not only what it did to the Woodburn community and the state of Oregon, and then even as far as Texas and Mexico, teams coming from everywhere, but also about the education. I wrote about some of the discrepancies that went on, you know, like a lot of people, several people might have thought that it was discrimination because only Latinos could play in it or part Latino. And you know, I always wondered myself, yeah, I don't understand. I'd be glad to play against anybody. But when I started writing this and doing the research and talking to the directors, there's 3 directors, you know, you have Victor Alvarado, Anthony Velez, and Rolando Ramirez. Those guys were so dedicated in leadership roles. Talking to them, I realized, you know, I really don't think there's any discrimination here. I think it's more of a cultural thing. You know, it's about heritage, about like-minded people. Experience something amazing that brings them together every year, and they look forward to it every year. And you know, you have the food, you have the entertainment, the talented players that showcase their talent. It was just, and it's still going on today. Now it's held at Willamette, but before it was held in Woodburn, where it started. So I tell the whole story, the history of it, and then of course my team went to won a big one 1 year, and that was amazing. I had to write about that chapter, so I have a chapter, our story, you know, and it was just miraculous. We only had like, we had 6 guys, and our tallest guy had to go back to college on the Sunday for the finals, and we got in the winner's bracket. It was like, I don't know, 16 teams there. So we were all a little bit down, but the 5 of us, we did it. We won the whole thing. We had to pull up our ball boy to help because we were sub. It was amazing. But so I wrote about that adventure, and then, you know, I have like 20 former Latino players that played that I got a hold of, and I interviewed them, and they gave me their take on it. It was pretty amazing to have their quotes in there. And then, of course, the girls, the Latinas that started playing, and they just grew every year to educate themselves. And a lot of them end up playing college basketball. And so, at first I didn't have the details. And when I interviewed Victor, they start realizing, wow, you have pictures and you have so many details that I didn't know about. And I'm like, recorded our whole conversation. So I had enough for a book, because at first I didn't. Then I interviewed Anthony Velez, the second director. He directed for like 10 years. And then Rolando Ramirez, the third one. And all those guys were so willing to share the details, contribute to it. It was amazing. And it just developed into a nice book. And the photos, it was a lot of work. As an author, you have to collect the photos, organize them. But, you know, again, we talk about upgrading. And I wanted to do better every book I wrote. And so it seemed like every book that I wrote, I got better. I learned more. And as an author, it's exciting to release a book. And when people see a new book, they don't realize the years of work that you put into it. The book and, oh, man, but they don't realize the years of work, the nights, the sleepless nights, you know, because when I'm writing something, I always think about it and I can't sleep. I just think about ideas and how I could attack this and how I could deliver it, you know. And so for me, I don't sleep very much during close to publishing or as I'm writing the book. And then times I relax myself just to get away with it. Like I take a week off and don't even think about it. I just, or go on a walk or, you know, go on a vacation or something. And then when I come back to it, I'm more refreshed and I can go more. But it's just about persistence, dedication. And you know, I have a lot of faith. I have to say that I do give thanks to Jesus Christ, my Lord, because without him, it would not be possible. And I do think that a lot of my prayers have been answered over the years. If anybody read my autobiography, it's called Half Blind with Full Vision. You'll get my whole story from when I was born or when I was 5 years old. I had a really, really life-changing accident. And I don't know how many kids could have made it, but I really think that when you're a believer and you know that somebody's up there watching it, because I started going to church, oh man, probably even before 5 years old, because my mom was really, really into God. She put it that way. She made us go to church, and I didn't go to church when I was little, but she made us go. And as I went, you know, I listened and I learned and started realizing that there was a God, you know, and so a lot of my mindset of trying not to do the wrong thing as growing up as a kid, it comes from going to church. And I thank my mom for that. You know, my dad, I mean, like it was, my dad was kind of like the eclipse, you know, they only happen so often. So when he would go to church, it was like a miracle, right? But with my mom, she'd go with us and make us. But I think my dad probably didn't go to church too much because he was so tired from working all week, you know, he hard labor. And so that was his day of rest. But yeah, my software developing career, same thing, you know, before I became an author, I developed software for 31 years for public service. And that job was pretty amazing. I mean, I didn't, to be honest, Nick, I don't know how I did it other than, again, I think the Lord carried me through, because I was not as bright as some of those nerdy technical people. Man, sharp people out there that can just code a program in a few days, or, you know, have these. And so I learned from them, and I got my foot in the door in 1986. But I started working for the state of Oregon in 1982. That's when I started. And then in 1986, I started developing software because I got that job I wanted from going to school. I went to school as a computer science major. There weren't too many Latinos, trust me. When I went here, I was the only one in the shop. So I dealt with a lot of uncomfortable situations that I kind of just let go. I mean, I didn't want to mess it up with my job. I didn't, you know, cause any issues. But there were some people that were, you know, I dealt with a little bit of discrimination. And some people would say, well, it's perception. But for me, it was not just perception, because it was a repeated thing, you know, and you could tell there was a lot of great people where I worked. All credit to those people that kind of guided me and, you know, mentored me. So I learned every year in this computer field, and I became an analyst, a systems analyst, and I just kept learning. And I think I was content with being a systems analyst. That's because I didn't want to be in so many meetings, you know, love meetings. But anyway, yeah. And when I decided to retire, I mean, I had written two books, and it was getting in the latter part of my career as a developer. And, you know, a lot of people say, you know, you should go after the career you're going to be happy with. And, you know, but the way I was raised, I was going after a career that I could do the things I could never afford. You know what I mean? That job paid really well when I went to college, give me a job that's secure and pays well. And I said, well, why don't you try the computer field? And at Chemeketa Community College, one of the counselors that I talked to, and I go, I'll give it a try. So I started digging into it, and, you know, I seemed to enjoy it a little bit. You know, it wasn't bad, and I knew it would pay money, and it was just like having homework in school to me, you know, because it was hard and I had to learn it. and, you know, I had to pass the grade to play sports, you know, so that's where all that came from. And then once I got into it, I started realizing, hey, this isn't too bad. Actually, it's kind of nice. So I did that for a long time, ran into some other family situations that were very difficult during that time. And I wrote about it in my autobiography as well. But anyway, and then I started thinking, you know, I want to make it a goal to retire early. So I started looking and doing research and said, well, if you stay in the same place and the same agencies or whatever, you get 30 years, you're eligible to retire with full benefits. And well, I lasted 31 years because I wanted to get rid of that 6 month trial that they give you at the beginning. So that doesn't. So that was a little nerve wracking too, when I started in 82, like, are they going to keep me or not? So I was doing the best I could, but it seemed like every interview that I did, I got the job, you know, and until towards later, it's a little bit tougher, more. But when I got into the software, you know, I prayed pretty hard, and I was running up against this guy that graduated from the University of Oregon in computer science. And I had a associate's degree, not much experience at all. But I was able to talk to the the team leaders and the managers in the meeting. I think like four or five managers interviewed me. I wrote a little bit about this in my autobiography, but yeah, I just try to be myself and answer the question. I just let them know, hey, I really would love this job. It would mean a lot. And so somehow they just talked about it. And all of a sudden I get a call and says, you got the job. What? Because I knew, oh, this guy's going to get it. He's got a bachelor's degree. But you never know. I mean, you know. And so I really think that some of my prayers were answered, and just works in mysterious ways. I can't explain it. But it was a blessing, a true blessing to have that. And then, of course, I made a goal. It's like, I want to get out of here at age 55. And I did it. I reached my goal just through objectives, you know, set an objective, doing what I needed to do. A lot of challenges, but, you know, it's like, if you don't give up, have that mindset of wanting to do better for your family, I think anybody can succeed.
Absolutely. David, can we go back to, you know, we quickly rushed through kind of your ideas and, you know, for parents to have kids as athletes. I mean, that's something that's near and dear to my heart. Both of my sons are athletes, and, you know, right now with COVID, that's really not a good combination, you know, with a junior in high school that missed, you know, his baseball season and probably is going to miss this whole year as well. So that's going to be football and baseball again. They might be able to limp baseball along. It seems to be one of the few sports that they can kind of keep going with COVID. But so when you said things like, you know, it's important to help kids can, you know, keep your focus. What's your priority? I mean, kids to have fun and, you know, 500 tournaments a year and those types of things. So, you know, what are you seeing? Cause I know your boys, you know, have kids as well. I know you're a grandfather. So what are you seeing kind of here with the youth sports scene, and what are your concerns that you're seeing?
Well, I guess one of my concerns is that kids are missing out on their social experiences, on their team camaraderie, on the learning aspect of sports, and just the fun part of being around other kids. I do understand about COVID-19, but I also understand that when kids are younger, they recover really fast. There's treatment now. If the coaches choose to wear masks, I support that 100%. If they want to keep the attendance to 25%, or just to the parents and nobody else, or, you know, so they're 6 distance apart, I support all that. I think they should continue sports, but that's just my opinion. I do believe that what's happening right now is a lot of the parents are sending their kids to Idaho, you know, Idaho, Montana, some of these other states that are, and we're losing a lot of athletes, because eventually these kids are going to end up playing over there. If we talk about it, I think that it's not good for the kids. I think more kids are going to get more ill just staying at home and not having that aspect of their life, emotionally, psychologically. And I'm working with a couple of kids right now that they came over. Well, I did lessons during the summer, and I learned a lot. And there's a couple of girls that I've been working with. One of them is, I keep in touch with her to get into the open gyms. She was able to get in though because she was homeschooled. So it's a little tough for a homeschool kid. She's got a lot of potential. So she learned a lot of skill set. So right now I really feel that if we have no control of what's going on with the state government, you know, like not allowing kids to play, or I really feel that you can have a better mindset about it and develop skill set for your kids, because you can do that at home, in the garage, outside, or however you can do it. Even if you have somebody instructing the child skill set, even through, like, I know in the Salem Hoops Project, my son and I, Matt Espinoza, he's I'm the director of operations, you know, and he's the executive director and the trainer. He's doing some of these free clinics now on Zoom, or I don't know how he does it, Zoom or anyway, online, to help kids continue teaching kids. And so what I've been doing is I've been encouraging this girl, her name's Natalie, to continue, and because they have a shop in the back of their house and they have a hoop to go out there and work on the skills that I taught her this last summer, like ball handling, the shooting form, the, you know, all these footing drills that I showed her, and she got better at them as we met each week. And she's doing it, and she's doing it. And so it's, I think she's having fun with it. I think it's given her something out of the boring day that she can't go anywhere or, you know, can't participate in anything, to go out and shop and work on these skills. Because when I was growing up, Nick, that's one of the things that helped me overcome the bullying in my school, or not making a team or whatever. I always made the team because I worked hard at developing my skill sets. I didn't just sit around home. I was outside shooting, getting better at my shots, or, you know, punting the football, kicking the football. It all started way back when I was younger. And as I developed these skill sets, I learned that most of the kids respected me a lot more and looked up to me instead of bullying me or whatever. It just changed the whole atmosphere, attitude, and everything. And so that motivated me to continue getting better in whatever I did. I mean, like playing the guitar, playing ping pong. I mean, I used to could run a table and pool during college. Wanted to get better and worked on my skill sets. How do you do it? Well, anyway, the same with sports. I think right now is a great time for kids to work on their skill sets, because right now, I mean, especially in these, they call them elite teams. I'm a strong supporter, don't get me wrong, but sometimes these elite teams can forget about the skill set developing and then just put a tall kid playing underneath because they're tall. And then later in life, this kid doesn't know how to handle the ball, and all of a sudden somebody passes him up. The kids that have been practicing, and they get left out, and they're sitting on the bench, or, and in sports to have fun. I think not every kid, I don't want to say every kid, some kids do enjoy just being part of the team and supporting the team on the bench, and that's cool. But there's a lot of kids that want to play, want to have part of the team to contribute. Those kids need to work on developing their skill sets, because I don't care how tall you are or how they call it fixed mindset you are, because with fixed mindset, you think that you have so much talent that you don't need to practice until you get with your athleticism. But that's not true, because it's been proven that the kids that aren't that good and work at their skill set, by the time they're in high school, they put up the fixed mindset. So anyway, yeah, my opinion on what's happening right now is we're losing a lot of kids to the other states right now. I'm afraid that Oregon is going to have weaker teams and I don't blame them. You know, the kids want to play, the parents want to go watch. It's fun. I experienced the whole thing, and I feel really bad for the seniors in high school, especially.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
It's really tough. I don't know if that answers your question or.
Yeah. Yeah. And I, you know, one of the things that I heard in there, and I'm, you know, getting really curious on your take on it is, and I've coached last year, the team for my youngest son basketball won the AAU state championship for sixth graders. I've taken baseball teams to their state championships. And sure. I've now kind of have transferred that out over into where I'm not the main coach anymore for any sports. I get to play the role of a dad, which I'm good with, but I understand kind of that tension and that push and pull. Like you said, yeah, you put the tall guy under the hoop and just feed him the ball the whole time. Right. Well, yeah, that might win you a game, but what are you doing? Or it might win you a season, might win you a championship at the youth level, but what are you really doing for player development across the board there? So, and that's a delicate balance too, you know, because as a youth sports, you know, coach, you got to deal with parents, you know, and they probably paid more money than just the standard recreation league. And, you know, this kind of this pressure and this need to win, you know, versus player development, you know, coach, why'd you put that kid in at that point in time? And, you know, it's a tough dynamic to be in, you know, on the youth side of things, both as a player and as a dad coach.
Yeah, exactly. And then also along with that, one of the things that I thought about is, you know, a lot of people that can afford to do that, great. But I'm thinking that the people that are really going to feel it the most are the kids in poverty that, you know, yeah, afford to going to school and being part of the
team. Yeah, because they're not going to Idaho or Arizona or Nevada to play, right?
Yeah, not discouraging the people that have the money to do it. I'd say if you enjoy doing it, it's working out right with your children, I'd say go for it, because there's nothing here in Oregon right now. But if you can't do it, you can work on skill sets, find ways mm-hmm. to get better, because when that time comes in high school, you'll be ahead. You'll be ahead of the game with those skills. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing how many kids I've worked with that don't know how to do a layup. I mean, right. I have been so, you know, and I teach them the fundamentals, and they definitely, like Natalie can do a right hand, left hand land. She's gotten a lot better just because somebody was there to point her out, you know, the techniques.
Yep. Absolutely. We spent a lot of times on my teams, drilling layups and, you know, three to 5 foot shots, because if we made, you know, even half of those on the youth side of things, you know, we would be successful.
Yeah.
I think you start out early season being, you know, 10, 20, 30%, you know, from shots right at the hoop. So,
yeah. And sometimes, I don't know about how you coach, Nick, but I know with kids at a certain level, there's some coaches that want to put in like 5 or 7, 6 plays. I mean, when I was coaching kids, third, fourth, fifth grade, I was just running 1 or 2 plays. I mean, they can't learn that fast. And they're, you know, dealing with their skill set at the same time. I think that at certain levels you can teach that, but I don't know. I'm just surprised at some of the coaches that put in that many plays for the young.
Yeah.
I don't know how they do it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm 43, so I'm a little bit older than your sons. And, you know, and I didn't play in college. I probably could have walked on for baseball. I didn't even know that walking on was a thing in college. And I just, in a phase of my life where I didn't have, you know, I definitely didn't have a father figure to kind of help me navigate some of those things. But, you know, so I didn't really have, you know, beyond high school, but I was a 3-sport athlete in high school, and, you know, all leagues and, you know, all-star teams and all that kind of jazz. So I knew what I knew, and I ended up taking a basketball course for PE credit at Willamette from Gordy James.
Okay.
And
I know Gordy.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. He's kind of a legend in terms of basketball.
Matt, Coach Noza does a pro classic every year. So according to works, but he knows Gordy real well. And
absolutely. So I learned a ton about the game, you know, and I took that class. I only needed 1 quarter credit for PE. I think I took it, three terms in a row.
Yeah.
And so, and I've played a lot of, you know, rec league basketball as an adult, and people always say, where'd you play? And I was like, well, I just played high school. No way. And but I was, you know, kind of coached by Gordy James for, you know, a year and a half. So
that was my kid. Yeah. You as a dad, how old are your kids? 13?
You say, yeah, about 13 and a 16 year old.
Oh, so you'll actually be able to play against them someday, because with my kids, when they grew up enough, I was playing one-on-one with them. And it's actually a fun experience. It's, parts of sports you can play against your kids with your kids on the team. Well, that was a lot of fun. They started beating me when they were in freshman in Salmon high schools.
I think from photos they might be a little bit taller than you too. At least one of them is.
Yeah, Jake's 6'5" and Matt's 6'4".
Yeah.
I had a great grandfather that was like 6'9".
Oh yeah. Nice.
Oh, and then some cousins in Texas, they're pretty tall. So it doesn't come from their mom, because her family was all short.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so I was, you know, across the board, all sports, and the level of sophistication that is placed on the youth age was beyond anything that I was doing in high school when I played. And so, like your comment about, you know, putting all these, you know, plays and sets and, you know, and, you know, it's kind of a mantra that I've heard, and I kind of has to, you know, check myself, is, you know, teach the kid the game, not necessarily plays. Right. And so, I try to hold true to that, you know.
Yeah, if you give them like a couple of plays, that's great, because they can, and then just make sure they work on them. But the skill sets are probably more important. Well, I say both are important, but the skill sets are really important to develop each kid. And a lot of coaches will ignore half the team and just focus on a few kids that are more talented. Yeah. I don't like that, because a lot of these kids that aren't so talented, they learn over the years. And I've seen so many situations that the kids that were not as good when they were kids, all of a sudden they pass up these other guys and they become all-stars because they worked hard. Yeah. So
absolutely.
I see the younger kids and teams be taught just the same as the talented kids. Keep them equal. Yeah. Give them a little playing time, develop them, you know, look for the whole team to improve every week, not just the certain players that you think have an opportunity.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then another thing that bothers me, I wrote a lot of stuff in that Parenting the Athlete, but yeah. A lot of these parents that you sit up in the bleachers and you hear them, oh, he'll be playing D1. He'll be playing D1 in junior high. No.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, well, yeah. No. So those are the kind of parents I wish that would read my book, but I don't know if they will or not. But then there's a lot. I mean, I have little short stories in there, true stories that happen with kids as well. You know, the dark sports. You know, there was a guy feeding steroids to his kid in a cereal when he was young.
Jeez.
I know. Wow. That. And so that really happened. But what happens when you cheat on your kid, like, he didn't even know it. The kid didn't even know it. You do that kind of stuff. And then later on in life, when they find out, it just tears your relationship up and you don't. And
right.
It caused a lot of issues. They had to go to counseling and stuff. And yeah, it was just horrible. Because what happened is this kid went on to hurt his knee in college. He was good. He was good. A professional prospect to go to the NFL. But he hurt his knee in college, and that was it. And once that happened, you know, things just went really bad for the whole family. So parents do things that are just over the edge that shouldn't. I mean, I never thought of that until I doing research. Right. It's, what? Are you kidding me? Or a girl. Yeah. You know, there was a girl that had anorexia. She was a runner. Or even with like wrestlers, you know, they have to lose weight.
Sure.
Things that I really don't like about sports, but I think it's good that parents need to know about this so they don't accidentally get into that game, you know, they think that winning is so important that they have, you know, hurt their, and then they won't have fun eventually. That's not what it's about. So
yeah,
that things get better. With this kind of stuff, and especially with the during the games. I don't know if you sat in a game. I'm sure you have, where you see the parents yelling out curse words.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
They just get it every day. Every day. I don't know what's going on with these parents. They're so competitive. They want to win so bad that they just don't. People think about them when they're up in the bleachers, but they're actually setting examples for those kids on the down there, and they're watching them. And when those kids grow up, they're going to do the same thing. Whew, yeah, so, you know, I'm not saying I was never one of those parents, because, you know, I had a few words with some refs when my kids were playing. You get really into it, but you know, I started catching myself down. Right. Gosh, I shouldn't be doing that, because even my kids would tell me, "Dad, don't say anything embarrassing me." Hey, sorry. You know what I mean? I mean, I don't know if you've been in that position or not, but.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I can understand why parents, and I've been there. So in the book I wrote, you know, I'm not saying that I was never one of those. I was. That's why I changed my mindset on that, too.
Yeah, and that's where, you know, my daytime job, David, is, you know, I work for the Oregon Youth Authority.
Oh, wow.
Youth Corrections. So I've been there for 21 years. And so, you know, those years building up to the point to where I had kids and started, you know, being coached, you know, and started coaching my kids, you know, I was thankful to tap into that skill set, you know, because working in a corrections environment, you got to deal with hostile people all the time and keep your cool, right? And don't lose it. And so that's really benefited me, you know, as a coach, where, you know, dealing with parents or dealing with other coaches that are just, you know, off their rocker. And it's like, okay, yeah, take some deep breaths. It'll be all right. You know,
and not the end of the world.
Yeah. Not that I've been perfect by any means. I've definitely, I don't think I've received a T in my career. But I probably have been close at least once or twice. So
I've gotten a few of them. Unfortunately, I had a few of them. Nice. Yeah. but at the same time with sports, I did talk in this book that I wrote, Parenting the Athletes. I talked a lot of the positive side of it, because I think that was sports are great for kids.
Yes, like, absolutely.
Environment with camaraderie, you learn how to take instruction, you experience, you know, being around friends to treat these trips, and then also it does help you in your studies as well, because proven that athletes are make good students. You know,
absolutely.
That's something to your emotional mindset.
When your physical fitness is linked to your overall,
absolutely,
you know, success, right?
Yep,
so,
absolutely.
Yeah. And I agree too. I think that, you know, the life that we have here and now in 2020, even with COVID, right, is a pretty easy life, you know, comparatively in terms of what the struggle could be for, you know, for our kids and what they have access to and whatnot. And I think sports is a way for them to face adversity and learn how to overcome adversity. Yeah. And I think, I've seen scenarios. This is for my oldest son, when he was still playing basketball, there was a scenario where it was the first tournament of the season and they ended up losing 99-12. And at halftime, I overheard the coach say something like, "Well, guys, you're not going to win this game, so I don't know what else to tell you," and basically turned them loose to, shoot around or whatnot. And I looked at my wife and I thought, oh my gosh. But, I actually look forward to those times when a team makes a run on us and we're down 10, 12, 15, 20 points. Cause I'll say, all right, we've got 2.5 minutes left. They only score 5 points. We score 15 points. If we do that, we can go into halftime and have something to build on, right? So just kind of breaking it down, chunking away at that adversity little bit by little bit. But no way I'm going to say, oh, we're not going to win, so you might as well just give up. Just no way.
Yeah. Yeah. I've played three sports, football, basketball, and track and field. And then I've coached I've coached every one of them.
Yeah.
Enjoyed it all, and I see all the positive things about sports. And then just when you see the smiles on the kids, did you see the emotions on their face of just how they feel they accomplished,
Yeah.
And also one of the things I like, or probably the best thing I like sports is the kids aren't out and getting into trouble, on the street.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah.
The book I just wrote, I think was one of the biggest things that the kids off the streets or doing something positive, looking forward to the tournament every year. It was just something that helped the whole community. And
absolutely,
a lot of kids change with these experiences to the better, And then there's some kids that go on to become very successful, and then they kind of give back to the community as well. And then they teach kids the same thing, which I like. Yeah. That it kind of trickled down.
Yeah, absolutely. I worked, for a lot of years alongside Rolando Ramirez at McLaren. Oh. So I know him really well.
Good guy. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Rolando Contreras is one of my employees now. Oh, really? I know that he's been. Yeah.
Yeah. He just bought 3 copies of the book.
Yeah. He's got a heart of gold for sure.
Yeah. I remember actually, I think I might have, I was on my older side and he was on the younger one. I started playing against his team, jam session.
Yeah. Yeah,
but he could run pretty. He was fast, and I played college league. I was always the older guy because age where they were younger and I was older. But
absolutely. Well, David, I really again appreciate you making time for me and just giving us all a little insight into several of the books that you've written. For folks that say, hey, I want to read this guy's story. I want to read about the Latino basketball, the history of that. And I want to learn more about how to be a parent with kid athletes. Where can they find you? Where can they go buy your books?
Yeah, just go to my website, www.davidespi.com, davidespi.com. You can go there if you want it signed, or if you want to ask me questions, go to my website. And then if you want to just order through Amazon, it's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or even if you go to any retail bookstore, you can order it from there as well and then pick it up there. But I definitely recommend you order it from me so that I can write a little message for you or support the local author.
absolutely. Yeah, we've got to do that for sure.
Well, it was a big crit. That's one of my best venues where I meet a lot of people, and I sold several books there. So
yeah. And are you on social media?
Yeah, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram at Author David SB.
Awesome. And I'll put all those links in the show notes for this show, so when folks find it there, they'll know exactly how to get in touch with you.
But again, I appreciate you inviting me to be a guest, and I really enjoyed this time, and I hope I've been of some help to others.
Absolutely. Yeah, perfect. And, I just love your story is about, like you just kept saying, I just wanted to be better. I just wanted to be better, whether it was writing books or at work, right? Or being an athlete, being a coach. I just wanted to be a little bit better than I was before. And I think that's a huge thing that anybody can apply to their life. You may not be where you want to be right now, but you absolutely can push yourself an inch or two from today to tomorrow. And I think, a lot of people don't think that's enough, right? But it is enough if you do it over and over and over again. Your thoughts on that, just being a little bit better every single day?
Yeah, it's like it goes back to the growth mindset again. You know, mm-hmm. you have to learn through. Mm-hmm. You're not always going to get it right the first time. You're gonna fail. You know, I failed many times in certain things I wanted to do in life, but I didn't give up. You know, I kept trying to find other ways, and it all comes to objectives. You know, learning those objectives. What do I need to reach this goal? And then where do I need to get this information, whether it's a mentor, whether it's a book, whether it's your own experiences. Like my books, my stories, all my details come from my life experiences, you know, that were true. And anyway, I'll leave it at that, that, you know, you find out what you need to do get to do better the next time. You learn from your failures. Don't ever say you can't do it, that you don't have the talent, because it just takes hard work, dedication, persistence. And then eventually it'll get there. Have faith.
Big one. That's right. Love it. I agree 100%. All right, David, take care. Hopefully we can do another one of these conversations sometime down the road.
Sure, for sure, man. Thanks you. Have a good day.
All right. Well, there you have it, my conversation with author David Espinoza. I don't know if you caught it, but in our conversation, you know, this is happening during COVID. In the state of Oregon, they canceled our state fair. It makes sense if you're concerned about COVID and wanting to not have large groups of people from all over the place congregate in the same area. Probably was a smart move to cancel the state fair. But that put a big damper on David and his ability to connect with people as an author. He would have a table at the section of the state fair where they let authors come and connect with their readers and sell their books. That didn't happen for David this year because of the state fair. So I really want to encourage folks that if you were inspired by something that David said in this conversation, go show him some support. Go buy one of his books. They're reasonably priced. And if you buy it from his own website, he will sign it and maybe write you a little message to help encourage and just brighten your spirits. David's website is www.davidespi.com. I'll say that one more time. DavidEspi.com, www.davidespi.com. So head over there. He's got 7 books to choose from. You'll see his most recent book at the front, at the landing page, and that's going to cover the Latino basketball tournament that has been going on for at least 3 decades here in my area, Salem, Oregon. You're going to see that book on the landing page. You should be able to click through and see all of the books that he has written. If you are a sports parent, check out his book that he wrote for parents of young athletes. If you just want an encouraging story, his story is just that. It's encouraging, it's powerful, it's inspiring, and it's called Half Blind with Full Vision, God Was Always With Me. I'll be sure to put a link to David's website in my show notes. In order to get the show notes, you got to go over to my website, which is www.nicksotelo.com/TUL podcast. When you go over to my website, you can see all of my shows posted up there. You can see all of the show notes. You can see all the links to connect to the wonderful people that I've had on the show, including this one, author David Espinoza. You're also going to see 3 opportunity buttons there. That's just 3 ways that you could invest about 20 minutes of your time into checking out some info, and the info may be able to help you upgrade your life. One opportunity button is to book a coaching call with me, give you 30 minutes of my time, and I guarantee you at the end of the 30 minutes, you'll have clarity about what the next step is for you to upgrade your own personal life. Another opportunity button is all about how do you add extra income to what you have going on in order to do the things that you want to do, in order to have the time that you want to have. You need to be able to fund those things, and extra income is the only way that you can fund things that you currently aren't doing right now. I can show you how to do that. Again, 20 minutes of your time is all it takes. It's just info. Most people jump right in, sign up, look at the info, and then all you got to do is tell me, yeah, Nick, tell me more, or no, it's not for me. No problems. I honor your response. And then the last opportunity button is all about CBD. CBD is all around us. You see it at the grocery store. You see it in ads that are hitting us on the internet. You see it as you're driving around your town, at least my town. There are CBD stores everywhere. Your coworkers are talking about it. Your family members are talking about what is CBD all about? Well, let me help you bridge that gap. I have been taking a lot of time lately just to study it as best I can. I've read several books about CBD and I've learned a lot. Let me give you some major takeaways. Your body is already set up to receive CBD. We just don't really feed our body things that have CBD in it. So it's an opportunity button. It's info. It'll tell you if CBD is something you should be looking at in terms of what you need in your body. And if it is something that you're interested, just let me know and I'll give you even more information. If it's not, again, just let me know and no worries, no harm, no foul. I will honor your response. I appreciate you so much. This is Christmas week 2020. This is Monday the 21st, which means Christmas is coming at the end of the week on Friday. It's been a long one, 2020 has. It has brought us lots of things to embrace, lots of challenges, lots of things to overcome. And my prayer for you all listening to the Upgraded Life podcast is that I hope this has been a source of inspiration. I hope that you have been able to get through some of the tough times in 2020, particularly by tuning into the Upgraded Life podcast. If that's been the case for you, let me know. You can let me know by leaving me a review on iTunes. Leave me a 5-star review, then actually type in a written review. And if this has helped you get through 2020, let me know in a review on iTunes. You can also send me an email, nick@nicksotelo.com. You can hit me up on social media. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram, both as Nick Sotelo and as the Upgraded Life podcast. You can leave me a message there. If there was a particular episode that helped you the most, why don't you share that episode? Go to the platform where you listen to this podcast and find the share link and post it on your social media and post it and leave a message saying, hey, 2020 wasn't all that bad. This is something that helped me get through. I would love to see people recognize how this podcast has helped you because that's the primary reason why I do it. I carve out time to do this, and I really want other people to benefit from it. So if that's been you, let me know. I just told you a handful of ways of how you can do that. My final thought for you is to close out 2020 as best as possible. Do the things that are most important to you. Spend time with friends and family. Tell them that you love them. Show them that you love them. And let's look forward to 2021. There has to be brighter days ahead of us. I believe that we will overcome COVID-19. I believe that we will restore life even better than what it was before. So join me in those thoughts. Join me in that vision for 2021. And let's finish 2020 very well. Be kind, be thoughtful, be grateful, show love to those around you. This has been Dr. Nick Sotelo. This is the Upgraded Life podcast. I just gave you all kinds of encouragement. As soon as this podcast is finished and you have pressed stop, do something. Do something that is going to help you realize and reach your potential. Say a prayer, tell somebody thank you, do some jumping jacks, do some push-ups. Set goals for 2021. Do something. Do something that's going to push you just a little bit forward in this journey called life. My blessings to you all. Thank you so much for listening. One more episode coming next week, and they'll be done for 2020, and then I'll be focused on the show for 2021.